Masechet Baba Mesi'a Daf Yod Bet. We return to a statement that we mentioned yesterday, and we ask a further question about it. Gufa. Ra'a otan rasin achar mesi'a ve'gomer, amar Rabbi Yirmiya, amar Rabbi Yochanan, v'hu sharas acharehen u'magi'an. Ba'e Rabbi Yirmiya b'matana he'ach, ki b'lamine Rabbi Abba Barkana, af al pi sharas acharehen ve'enan magi'an. The Mishnah that we saw yesterday said that if you see some people running after an item and you're the owner of a field, then and you say, oh, I want my field to acquire it. Well, does it work? It depends. Rabbi Yochanan explains that if he can run after, let's say it's a deer, and the deer has a broken leg and it's going very slow, and so the owner is there and he can run after it and secure it, then his field, even if he doesn't actually do that, as long as he can do that, then his field can acquire it for him. However, if it's running very fast and it's going just right through his field so fast, and he says, I want my field right now to capture it while it's on my field, it's no good because it's an unsecured field, and an unsecured field cannot acquire a lost item. Rabbi Yirmiyah asked, what if it's a gift that someone, it's not a lost item that's ownerless, but rather an item that is owned by a person who wants to give it to you by putting it, depositing it in your field? That in that case also, does it have to be attainable, reachable, or if it runs fast, or as we're going to see flying through, is that good enough? And Rabbi Abba Bar Kana answered, even if he runs after it, he cannot reach it, that's still okay. So if someone wants to give you a deer as a gift, because there's dat makne, since he's giving it over, it's sufficient that he'd let it loose. It runs into your field. It's in their field. You say, my field will acquire it. And even if it runs right out and there's no chance you could ever catch it, doesn't matter, that's yours, because there is a dat makneh. But if it's a lost item, then you have to be able to secure it in some way. All right, that was what we already saw. Now, next question, ba'erava. Zarak arniki bepetach zevi asa bepetach acher mahu. I want to gift to you a wallet, and so I throw it into your home, and it enters into one window and goes right out the back window and never actually lands in on your property. So what do we say about that? Avir she'en sofo lanuach kimunach tameh, or la avir, interestingly, is actually a Greek word, air, right? So even an English word, air, and avir, the vav would have been pronounced as a wow, and so awir and air, right? You could see that's the exact same word. So it's fun to see words that come from Greek and make it into English and Hebrew as well. Okay, anyway, so here's the question. If you have airspace that, and it's not expected to come to rest, you can do the trajectory and see it's not going to come to rest. Is that considered at rest or not? See, if it enters the airspace and the trajectory is that it's going to land in the house, well, then you acquire it. Even if in the middle someone ends up snatching it out of the air, still, since it would have landed, it's okay. That's like the same as a deer that you could get. Even if you don't get it, that's okay. That's considered secured. But in this case, it's not going, its trajectory is not going to land at all. It's just going over the airspace. But this, it is a gift. So there is a dat makneh. And so would we consider this the same as a deer running that you cannot catch, but you do acquire it, but here it doesn't touch the floor. So is that the same or not? Amar le Rav Papa le Rava, v'amri la Rav Ada bar Matana le Rava, v'amri la Ravina le Rava. Okay, the attributions here themselves are running away from us. There's all different attributions. Whoever said it to Rava said the following: Rav haynu matnitin, Rav tanasin achar mesiyah, v'amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, amar Rabbi Yochanan, v'usharas acharenu magi'an, u'be'er Rabbi Yirmiyah v'matana ha'ach, v'kibla mine Rabbi Abba bar Kana, v'matana afapisha ras. And so Rav Papa or Rav Ada or Ravina told Rava, this case of the flying wallet is the same as our Mishnah that says if everybody's running after an item and the owner says, I want my field to acquire it, and Rabbi Yochanan said, as long as you can catch it, that's okay. And that was regarding a lost item, but regarding a gift like it is here, even if it's running and you cannot catch it, it's still okay. So therefore, that should be the same. A running deer that you cannot catch and it's running through your field and someone wants to give give it to you, you do acquire it. Should be the same as a wallet that somebody wants to give to you, and it's flying through the air, and you cannot catch it, and it's not going to land, so it's not coming to, so it's not secured. But nevertheless, it should work, so it should be the same. Rava responded, Amar le, mitgalgel ka'amart shane, mitgalgel gede chemunach dameh. Are you comparing something that's rolling? Well, not, it's not actually rolling, but the deer is walking, running. But the point is that it's touching the ground. So rolling, I guess, as in something moving fast, running fast across on the ground, is still touching the ground. So if something is rolling or running, then at every instant, there is a foot on the ground. It is something rolling as fast as it's going. It still is touching the ground. And so to an animal running, well, maybe for a split second, it might be in the air, but it's coming and landing every half second. And so that is considered at that moment resting on the ground, even though you can catch it. So it's not, in that sense, it's not secured that you can't stop it, but it is touching the ground. And so you can acquire it in that second that it touches the ground. Whereas a wallet flying through the air does not touch the ground at all. And so it's not the same, though. You cannot prove it, and we leave this question unresolved. Next Mishnah. Misiat beno bito ketanim, misiat abdo v'shivchato kena'anim, misiat ishto hare elu shelo. If a person's son or daughter who are minors find an item, or his male or female a non-Jewish maidservant, or his wife, if any of these people are walking around and they find a coin and they say, oh, look at this nice coin, it goes to the father, husband, master. He's in charge of them, and if their finance provides for them, and therefore anything that they find has to go to him. However, misiat beno bito hagedolim, misiat abdov shifchato haibrim, misiat ishto shegirsha, af al pi shelo natan ketuba, hare elu shelahen. But if his adult son or daughter, or his slave or maidservant who are Jewish, or his wife who he had divorced, but he didn't yet pay the ketuvah, but is still divorced. So in all these cases, they have enough independence that anything that they find, they can keep. It does not go to their master, husband, father. Amar Shemuel, mipnema amru misiat katan le'aviv, shebishah shemosa meriba merisa esel aviv, ve'eno me'acher be'yado, merisa, meritz ota. So Shemuel, we're going to focus on the katan. How come a child who finds something, how come the child cannot acquire it for himself? How come it automatically goes to the father? Because of the normal human psychology, when the child finds something, he runs it over to his father and says, hey, look what I found. And he does not keep it in his possession. So a child, since whenever he finds something, he's like, oh, I wonder if this is valuable. And he automatically gives it to his father. That means he's having in mind that when he picks it up, he doesn't have in mind to keep it for himself. He has in mind like, oh, I better give this to my father. And that's why it goes to the father. All right, that's what Shemuel said. Let's analyze. Lememra de sabah Shemuel katan let lezichia lenafshem medoraita. So it seems that Shemuel is saying that a child on a doraita level cannot acquire anything, because that's just the basic psychology of a child, is he's not thinking about acquiring an item. He's whatever he's taking, he's giving over to his father. So that means a child on a doraita level cannot make an acquisition. V'hatanya, but we have a contradiction from a baraita. Hasocher et hapoel yelaket beno acharav lemechesa leshelush rabia lo yelaket beno acharav. Rabbi Yose omer ben kach uben kach yelaket beno vishto acharav v'amash Shemuel halacha k'Rabbi Yose. So Shemuel is going to agree with Rabbi Yose in the following scenario. If a farm owner hires a day laborer to go and work in the field and harvest, and so that this day laborer is a poor person, because what is he getting? You know, $10 an hour. And so as he's gleaning, anything that he forgets and leaves behind, poor people can take. And so if this day laborer's own son is going behind him and picking up whatever was dropped, we're assuming that he's not going to drop things on purpose for his son. There's other poor people there also. Then the son can keep it. So this seems to be assuming that the son is picking up things on behalf of his father, right? That the son does not acquire it for himself. But after all, even the father, who's a worker, is also a poor person. That is different from the next case of if it's a sharecropper. A sharecropper shares in the profits, and it might be a half or a third or a quarter, whatever the worker agrees to, the sharecropper agrees to with the owner of the farm. In that case, he's making a significant amount of money. He's not under the poverty line, and so he might not be a rich person, but the point of a poor person is that he has very little money under a certain amount of assets that he has. And so here, he is a partial owner even, or at least getting a fixed ratio of whatever he gleans. So in that case, when the child is not allowed to go after his father, because again, according to this, the child acquires things on behalf of his father, but his father is not below the poverty line, and therefore is not eligible to take from the gleanings. That is the opinion of Tanakh Kamma. Rabbi Yose, however, says, no matter what, whether the father is a day laborer or if he's a sharecropper, the child can go behind him, and his wife also can go behind him. So why? It must be that when the child acquires an item, the child acquires it for himself, and so too the wife acquires it for herself. Now the child and the wife, they are poor people because they don't have any assets. Even if the man is a sharecropper, and so he is not poor, but since the poor the child can acquire things for himself, and the child himself has no assets and therefore is poor, therefore they are eligible to collect from the dropped gleanings. Okay, and Shmuel agrees with Rabbi Yose. So we see from here that a child can acquire items. When the child picks something up, a lost item, he acquires it for himself. This goes against Shmuel, who we just derived from what he said. Since Shmuel said, a child always brings things to his father, that means the child does not have a competence to keep things for himself, but rather picks things up for the father. So now we have a contradiction between two statements of Shmuel. We further explain the question as follows. If you say that a child can acquire something, and then the statement of Rabbi Yose makes sense, because that would mean that when he's acquiring for himself, and he himself, the kid himself, is poor, and then the father, after they get home, the child can give it to the father, and the father can get it from him. That's okay. You can get something secondarily from a poor person, as long as it's a poor person that's getting the gleanings. But if you think that a child, as Shmuel first said, acquires everything cannot acquire for himself. So then when he's acquiring it, he's acquiring it on behalf of the father. But the father, in the case of a sharecropper, is wealthy. So then why should his wife and his son be permitted to collect the gleanings? That's the challenge. The answer is Shmuel ta'ama detana didan ka'amad velet la sibira le. Shmuel, in this first statement that he said here about the Mishnah, was only explaining the opinion of our Mishnah. How come something that a child finds goes to the father? He thinks, Shmuel's explaining that Tanakh Kamma thinks that a child, whenever he picks something up, takes it to the father. Shmuel's simply explaining this Mishnah, which is a different author than Rabbi Yose, but he himself agrees with Rabbi Yose that a child can collect something for himself. Okay, now that we established that there is a machloket about this, and Rabbi Yose thinks that a child can acquire things for himself on a doraita level. But now we have a contradiction with another statement of Rabbi Yose in the Mishnah Gittin. If a deaf person or an incompetent person or a child finds a hefked item, and then someone else comes and steals it, That we call that stealing. You're not allowed to go and grab something out of the hands of a found item from any of these three people. Why? Because that keshalom. In other words, according to Tana Kama, when a child picks something up, the child does not really acquire it. And therefore, from the letter of the law, anybody else can come and grab it right out of the child's hands, and that would be permitted because the child did not acquire it, so it's still ownerless. However, Rabbi Yosef says, no, that's full-fledged robbery. Someone else that comes and takes it is a robber. So that means, according to Rabbi Yosef, a child can acquire it for himself. Now, so far, so good. It seems that Rabbi Yosef is actually consistent with himself. He says a child can acquire an item fully mid deoraita. The problem is that Rav Chista reinterpreted Rabbi Yosef's words. Rav Chista, gezel gamur midivre hand. He says when Rabbi Yosef said that it's total theft, that doesn't mean total theft mid deoraita, but rather only mid derabanan. What does that mean? What's the difference between saying it's gezel gamur midivre hand and just saying bipne darkei shalom? Nafkamina lo siya bedayanin. The question is, if let's say a child finds a watch and then a thief comes and grabs it out of the child's hands, so mipne darkei shalom, we say that's stealing and you shouldn't do that. But now that he did it, can the bet din take it out of the robber's hands and give it back to the child? If you say it's only mipne darkei shalom, so that means, listen, you shouldn't do it, it's prohibited midrabanan, but it's not really stealing, so we're not going to take it away from the robber. Whereas Rav Chista, who says gezel gamur, he still means on the Rabbanan level, but it says the rabbis decided in their takana that if someone should come and take it, then we consider it like it's total theft, and the betin will remove it from the hands of the thief and give it back to the child. That's the only difference between them. But otherwise, it's on a deoraita level, the child does not acquire it. So that's the challenge against Rabbi Yosef. It's an interesting question because, you know, Rabbi Yosef in Peshat does not contradict himself. It's only Rav Chista who, for some reason, reinterpreted Rabbi Yosef, and then that introduces a contradiction. And now we say, oh, Rabbi Yosef, how could you contradict yourself? Anyway, we have a couple of answers. Ela amar Abaye, asa'ua kemi shehalchu ba nemushot, danim gufayhu mashi da'atayhu, sabri bere deha'ich melakete le. So Abaye explains that in this case, we consider the field as if the last of the gleaners have walked on it. There's a halakha regarding the lost gleanings, is that, well, okay, you have the farmer, He drops some things. So now anything he drops, the poor people can come and take. Now the poor people, they all come and take it, right? The first ambitious ones get there early in the morning and take a lot of stuff. And then there's the last guys who come and they take the leftovers of the leftovers. And then that's it. They finished. The last gleaner's finished. Now there's still going to be some stalks, right? Maybe small stalks that are left on the ground, right? Even the gleaners, they have better things to do. They can go to someone else's field where there's more. So this, even there, there's going to be still a little bit of leftovers. Now the halakha is once all the last of the gleaners have left, then the owner or a rich person can come and take whatever is still there, right? That's it. We left everything for the poor. They don't want anything else. So now anyone can take it. So in this case, when the poor people come and see that the son is there, the son of the guy doing the gleaning, so then they say, they give up. They say, oh, forget it. Since the son is there, the sharecropper, he's going to want his son to take everything, and the son's going to go right behind him and all that. So you know what? We're not going to bother. Since the poor gleaners give up and don't come anymore, it's as if the last of the poor gleaners has left, and therefore a rich person can come and take it. That is the reasoning of Rabbi Yosef. In other words, according to Rabbi Yosef, in fact, a child cannot acquire an item. That's what Rabbi Yosef thinks, according to the opinion of Rav Chista over here. So that's in fact the real reason, the real opinion of Rabbi Yosef. And in the case of the sharecropper who is harvesting and he leaves things and it says that the son can take it, it's not because the son is taking it for himself. In fact, the son is taking it for the father, and the father is rich. This, the only reason why it's permitted is because now that the son is there, there, all the poor people, they don't even come in the first place, so it's as if the poor people finished. And once the poor people finish with the field and don't come to the field anymore, then a rich person can take it, and that's why the poor people give up, and now the rich sharecropper could take it himself, and therefore his son also can take it on behalf of his father. Amar le Rav Ada bar Matana l'Abaye, v'chi mutar l'adam l'arbis ari b'toch sadeh kedeh shiru aniyim v'yibrechu. So Rav Ada bar Matana says Abaye, tells Abaye, who said this answer, this doesn't work. What, a person, let's say a farmer owner, can he put a lion at the front of his field so that the poor people won't come, and then the poor people will all run away, and then the farmer can say, oh look, all the poor people didn't come, so now I can take the rest myself. You can't create a situation that will send the poor people out thereby take everything. And so here too, no, this would not be permitted. You can't have put the son, your own son, there, and like, okay, everybody go, no poor people, we don't want you. No, the poor people have every right to come and take things and glean from whatever is dropped, and you can't give the message explicitly or implicitly that the poor are not invited here. So this doesn't work. The poor people have to have a chance to come and take what's theirs. Only afterwards the rich person can come and take after it. And so we would not permit the child of the harvester to pick up the poor, the gleanings on behalf of his father. It's not a good answer. Ela amar Rava, asu she'eno zoche kezoche. Mai tama nim gufayu nichalehu, ki echi dechi agaru ledidhu nilkot benayhu batrayhu. Rather, we make an ordinance, say, you know what, the child, even though it's the child of a rich person, because a sharecropper is himself a rich person, and nevertheless, we will give it to the child. Why? Because all the poor people get together and they make a conference and they make a deal. And they say, you know what, we're okay with this. We're totally okay. You know why? Because they each will benefit in their turn. When they are hired as a sharecropper and they're going to want their son to glean behind them, so they're going to want that. So therefore, all the poor people agree that even when they are not hired, they will allow someone else's another person who's a sharecropper to allow his son to come, so that when they're a sharecropper, they can have their son come. It's kind of like you have two partners in a business, and one wants to bring his son into the business. The other partner says, okay, I agree. Why would he agree? And he's diluting the business because he wants, when his son grows up in a couple of years, that he'll bring his son also into it. And therefore, even though technically the poor people have a right to come in and glean there, but they don't mind sharing their right with the son of the sharecropper, even though the sharecropper is rich, because what goes around comes around. And this guy's a sharecropper now, and he's getting a good salary this year. But so maybe next year, a different poor person will be the sharecropper and will want the same leeway to have his son come and take, and therefore they don't mind. Okay, Peliga de Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. Damar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba amar Rabbi Yochanan. Lo gadol gadol mamash velo katan katan mamash, ela gadol v'samuch al shulchan aviv zehu katan. Katan v'eno samuch al shulchan aviv zehu gadol. This opinion of Shmuel. Shmuel assumed we're talking about a minor. A miner doesn't have so much competence. And when the miner finds a nice gold coin, he doesn't say, oh, I better keep this for myself, I'll keep it in a safe place. He automatically runs and gives it to his father. So therefore, miners always give things to their father, pick it up on behalf of their father. So, and there, according to that interpretation, a miner in our Mishnah is referring literally to a child who is not yet mentally competent. However, Rabbi Yochanan disagrees and says, when the Mishnah is talking about an adult or a minor, it's not actually an adult or a minor. It doesn't really matter what age they are. Rather, it's using adult to, using these terms to say, are they financially dependent on their father or not? So if you have an adult, but he's still eating at his father's table, it doesn't have to mean literally eating at his father's table. It means that he's dependent on his father for his regular sustenance. That's considered the same as a minor. And if you have a minor who, let's say he's a child actor and he makes his own money, and he's not financially dependent on his father, well, then that's considered an adult. just usually minors are dependent and usually adults are not dependent. But if it is the other way around, then that's what it'll be. And the reason is as follows. Someone who's dependent on the father. So since the father is providing everything for that person, therefore anything that that person works or finds should go to the father. And that'll be true of his wife as well. And others and his children, right? If his wife is certainly an adult, assuming his wife is an adult, right? So she has competence, but the same idea. Since the father is providing for her food, clothing, and shelter, so anything that she finds should go to the household fund that the father is controlling. Whereas if someone is independent and not the father is not providing for them, even if it's a minor, so then why should the child have to contribute to the father's household fund when he's not benefiting from it? So he doesn't have to, and he can keep the item himself. Kind of like a woman who has a job and says, you know what, husband, don't feed me. I don't want anything from you. I'll take care of myself. So in that case, she can keep her earnings, which is the halacha. Okay, so that's the Biyochanan's interpretation of our Mishnah, very different from Shmuel's. We continue, Mitziat Abdov Shivchato Avrim Hare Hu Shel Atzman. An item that a Jewish slave or maidservant finds, they can keep. Amai, lo yehe ela po'el. Now, a Jewish servant is very much like a worker in various ways, although they can't just quit in the middle, like a worker can, but otherwise, you know, they're treated very well. And so here we ask, even if you treat the Jewish slave as a day laborer, still they should not be able to keep what they find. Why does the Mishnah say that they keep what they find? V'tanya, mesiat poel le'asmo. Ba'amed memorim izman shamar lo nakesh imi hayom ador imi hayom. Aval amar lo ase imi melacha hayom mesiato le'bal habayit. Rabbi Baraita that says, a day laborer, anything he finds, he can keep. When is that true that the day laborer can keep an item that he finds? Only if the boss hired him for a specific task and said, weed with me today, till for me today. So then since he's hired only for weeding and tilling, if he finds something, he can keep it. But if the owner said, do work for me, unspecified, that means any work, anything productive that the worker does will belong to the owner. All right. If the worker has a musical talent and comes up with a hit song while he's working in the field that day, it goes to the owner. Anything that he does on that day goes to the owner, and that would include if he finds a coin on the floor, then it goes to the owner. So you see, even a day laborer, something, whatever he does, if we find something, it goes to the owner. All the more so, a slave where the master owns all of his work, whatever he finds should go to the owner, and he should not be able to keep it. Good question. We're going to have three answers. Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Hacha be'ebed nokeb margaliot askinan she'en rabo rose leshanoto lemelacha acheret. We're talking about a case of a highly skilled slave. A person can be a slave but still have very important skills. And so this slave knows how to pierce a pearl. It's a very specified skill. You have to know how to make a hole inside through a pearl so you can put it on a necklace. It requires a lot of training to be able to do it correctly. So in this case, it's a slave, and the master owns a slave, and therefore technically owns anything that the slave will do. It's a Jewish slave, but anything is the master owns all of his time. And so therefore, in a normal case, if the master asks him to go and shovel the snow, till the ground, you know, just menial labor, then we assume that the master would want, if the slave finds something, to keep that also. And anything that the slave does, the master would want. That would be in a normal case. But here, because the slave is so highly skilled, the master, even though he owns anything that the slave would do, wants the slave to focus on the task at hand of piercing pearls, and don't take a break, and don't go and help out with taking out the garbage. Let someone else do that, right? You should do this only. Since the master has in mind to benefit from the slave only from this task, of piercing pearls. Therefore, the master doesn't have in mind that he should keep other things that the slave would do, so that if in the course of while he's piercing the pearls, he happens to notice on the floor there's a coin that doesn't belong to anybody, and he can go and pick it up while he's taking a break, and without taking away from the time of the master, so then he can keep it, because the master doesn't care about that. He's not thinking about that, he should keep that benefit of his slave, because the slave is so high valued. The master is only focusing on the slave's productive work, piercing pearls. That's answer number one. Rav Amar b'magbia mesia im melachto askinan. We're talking about any slave who's doing any kind of work, but while he's doing the work, without taking a break, he can also find this item. So the master tells him, go and take out the garbage. While he's taking out the garbage, he happens to pick up something that's valuable and is ownerless. He says, okay, I'll keep it. And so he's not taking, and he's doing the work anyway. It's not like he's taking time out and doing something else. So if while the very act he's doing for the master, he happens to get some money on the side by keeping something, then he can do it. And the master can't say, I own all your work, because he's doing it in the middle of doing the work. So the work that he's doing goes to the master. And this is just a by the way benefit, so he can keep it. Rav Papa amar kegon shesecharo lelaket mesiot. Vechidame de'akpe agma bechavre. Rav Papa says that Rav Papa is actually giving the answer from the other way around. When would we say that a laborer has to give what he finds to the master, specifically when the master hires him to find things? When would you do that? For example, a lake flooded over, and now there's fish on the ground, and you can there's free fish. All right, they're ownerless, and you have to go and get them. So he says, go, he hires a worker or a slave, and says, go and find lost items, right? Ownerless items. There's a bunch of fish over there. Go and get them for me. Well, then whatever he finds will have to go to the master. It would be the same if the master hires someone to go with a metal detector and look for coins on the beach. So then that's his job. So anything he finds has to go to the master. But otherwise, whether it's a laborer or a slave, if his task is to do something else and he happens to find something, so that he's finding something separately from the task that he's ordered to do, and that's why he can keep it. Hi, shifcha hechidame. When the Mishnah says that a shifcha ivriya or ama ivriya, a Jewish maidservant, if she finds something, then she keeps it. How could you construct a case where you would have a Jewish maidservant and she would keep something that she finds? How old is she going to be? The law of a Hebrew maidservant is that if you have a father who's down and out and he sells off his daughter as a minor to a master, so then she will be a maidservant until she's 12 years old, about. It's really until she sees two hairs at that stage of puberty, then she goes from being a ketana to a ne'ara. So let's just use 12 as an average. So she goes free once she reaches 12 years old. So if she's more than 12, what is she still doing as a maidservant? That can't be. There is no such thing as a maidservant that's older than 12. At 12 years old, either the master marries her or marries her off to his son, or she goes free. No matter what, she is not a maidservant anymore. So it must be that she's younger. So if she's under 12, and her father is alive, then anything that she finds will go to her father, even though she's working for a master, but still the right of a father over the items that his daughter finds still goes to the father, even while she's a maidservant. So in that case, she would be under the law of a minor, and anything that the minor finds goes to the father. So that can't be that case where she keeps it herself. Maybe you'll say, oh, maybe it's a case where the father died. So once the father dies, then she can keep what he has. Yeah, but the problem is, if her father dies, then she also goes free, and she wouldn't be a maidservant anymore. What's the connection between her father dying and her going free from her master? Well, that's a chidush of Resh Lakish, Tamar Resh Lakish. Amai v'liya kanat smab mitata av mirshut ha'adon mikavach omer. He, Resh Lakish, taught that and Amayvriya gets her freedom when her father dies from her master. And this is based on the Kal Vachomer. Kal Vachomer goes like this. When a girl reaches 12, she goes free from her master, but she does not yet go totally free from her father. A father has a right over a daughter, even after she's 12, until she's 12 and a half. So you see that it's easier for a girl to go free from a master than to go free from the father. Therefore, if when a father dies, she gains her independence. The rights that a father has over his daughter do not get inherited by the father's heirs. So she gets independence when the father dies. If so, all the more so from the authority of the master, which is easier to get out of. When the father dies, it must be that she gains her freedom. So if the father died, then she wouldn't be a maidservant anymore. So therefore, you see that there's no possible case where a girl would be a maidservant and also be able to keep her earnings, because if her father's alive, then it's going to go to her father. If her father's not alive, she goes free. If she's more than 12, she goes free. So how can you have a case? So this is a problem. And we answer, V'lav itotab reshakish, back when we discussed this in Masechet Kiddushin, page 16, we saw over there that Reshakish's Kal Vachomer was refuted. And so really, we don't have to answer this question. It could be, in fact, a case where the father died. And that's why she is still a maidservant. The father died, she's a maidservant, so anything that she keeps doesn't go to the father, because now she has independence from her father, she can keep it. That's the case that we're talking about. Now, Nema, Mehai, Namete, Vetiubta. Okay, the point of asking the question in the first place is to add another challenge against Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish, we already said that his Kal Vachomer is refuted. But in addition, even if his Kal Vachomer were to be good, it would contradict this Mishnah. So you see that this would be an additional argument against Reish Lakish. And we answer, Lo le'olam di'ite le'av. Umay hare hen shelahen lapuke deraba. No, it could be that the father, in fact, is alive, and we can reconcile this halakha with Reish Lakish. And when it says that she keeps something that she finds, doesn't mean literally that she keeps it. Really, it's going to go to the father. But we're saying that she keeps it. The point of that is that it doesn't go to the master. Right? That's the point. That usually it would go to the master. No, it doesn't go to the master because she's a Hebrew maidservant. Now, it will go to the father because she happens to be a minor. But that's from the law of being a minor, not from the law of being a maidservant. Next, Misiat Ishto, Gerisha Pishita. Mishnah taught that if someone's wife finds something, and then the husband gets it, because the husband is providing for her, and therefore whatever she finds goes to the household bank account, which is controlled by the husband and owned by the husband. And now, if the Mishnah then continues, says, if they divorced, then she can keep it. Isn't that obvious? Now they're divorced, so she's a single woman. Obviously, she can keep whatever she finds. We're talking about a case where it's a safek. Let's say the husband is trying to divorce his wife. He threw her a get. It landed in the public domain. It's not clear if it's closer to her, in which case she would be divorced, or closer to him. And she's not divorced, so now we're not sure if she's divorced or not. And Shmuel taught that any time the Chachamim teach that a person is divorced and not divorced, it's in a limbo case, so we have to be machmir, so she wouldn't be able to get remarried until she gets another get. In the meantime, the husband has to provide sustenance. And so, in this case, the husband has to provide sustenance, and therefore, you might have thought that since the husband has to provide sustenance, then it makes sense that he should get anything that she finds, because that's the deal. That's the usual barter agreement. So the chidush of the Mishnah is, no, since they might be divorced, she can keep what she finds. Why? In a normal marriage, the reason why the rabbis say that whatever the wife finds should go to the husband is so that there will not be enmity on the part of the husband to his wife. Because he'll say, I have to go and work hard, I have to make a lot of money and provide for you, and I give you food and clothing, and I buy you shoes and jewelry and everything. And now you found this gold coin, and you keep it for yourself, and you're not chipping in. to all the running of the household and all the expenses that I spend for you, he's going to be upset about that. So that's why, in general, to keep a marriage happy for Shalom Bayit, we say, listen, the husband provides everything for her. If she finds something, it should go to the husband. That's why. But in this case, right, where there is hatred, because we see that the husband tried already to divorce his wife, obviously they're not getting along very well. So since he already tried to divorce his wife, so there's already enmity. And so let there be more enmity. So what's that going to make him do? Give another divorce. Exactly. That's what we want him to do, to finish off the process of the divorce, so she can be totally free. And so let her keep the coin. In other words, from the letter of the law, she's an adult. She can pick something up and keep it for herself. It's only in a regular marriage. The rabbis say, listen, you picked something up, but your husband provides for you. So give it to him so you won't have enmity. Here, let there be enmity, and the divorce will be then be completed. Baruch Adonai le'olam. Amen v'amen.